You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Do you get to a point with election coverage where you see a story about polling and you think back to 2016 and ask yourself, how do they really know? A recent New York Times story named Michigan among the most inaccurately polled states for the last presidential election. Pollsters have been working on new methods to seek out hard-to-reach voters, to find ways to get closer to how voters will actually behave. Today, we've invited Bernie Porn to the studio. He's a partner and president of the research and survey firm Epic MRA, which does work for Democratic candidates and causes. And Tom Shields is also with us. He's senior advisor for Marketing Resource Group, a political strategy firm in Lansing. And he polls for many Republican contenders. Gentlemen, welcome to Stateside.
Glad to be with you. This is Bernie.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today.
Let's go back to the morning after Election Day 2016. Many pollsters, not just in Michigan, had predicted a Clinton win. What was top of mind for you? Tom, could you start us out?
It was just marveling at the numbers. I mean, it wasn't completely surprising. I think Bernie's polls showed the same thing. It wasn't completely surprising that Trump pulled it out. I think what was interesting is that everything lined up on Trump's behalf. It all broke on Trump's behalf. Everything that had to happen for him to win Michigan, of course, you only won by 10,000 votes, you know, everything had to happen, and it did. And it's just one of those things that is tough to predict. Normally what happens is that those people are undecided, either decide not to vote or they split their vote on either side of the camp. This way, you know, it was all breaking towards Trump. I think that was sort of the marvel of that. That plus then looking at where the vote was coming from. People who don't vote in presidential campaigns, don't vote in gubernatorial campaigns, were coming out of the woodwork to vote for Trump, which was hard for us to predict. We saw that support. I think we all saw that support. We had no idea the intensity of that support and the type of turnout that we saw in those areas. I mean, winning counties in northern Michigan by 30 and 40% that you would never expect in the past for that to happen. So I think that's what surprised me the most.
Bernie Porn, how about you?
Well, actually, we were quite pleased with the polling that we did. When we look at the numbers that we had, Clinton had an 11-point lead early on, and when she had her pneumonia scare on 9/11, she dropped down to a 3-point lead. And then during the debates, she was back up to an 11-point lead. And then after the WikiLeaks began to hit, she dropped down to a 7-point lead. And then the FBI Comey letter came out, and some new emails were found about Clinton, and she dropped down to a 4-point lead with 1 week to go. Now, I wish we would have had one more poll the day before the election, or the weekend before, because I think it probably would have shown just as it did in 1990 when we had Blanchard up by 8 points with a week to go, and then the weekend before, it was dead even, and I told the speaker when we were in my former life when I was working in the House that it was going to be a very close election, and unfortunately, he didn't tell me. He was calling me from Blanchard's office, and he said, oh, I'm fine. Tubby says I'm just going to be. I said, well, Governor, I think that you could be in trouble and you could well lose tonight. And the other thing is that our background is Democratic, but actually the 538 gives us a slight Republican twinge in terms of our results. And looking at the way we stratified, we were testing for intensity to vote, and so we did modify the stratification so that it wasn't like previous elections. It wasn't as good as we would have liked. And when we matched up the actual turnout of the election with our numbers with the slightly off stratification, when we looked at that, we would have been right on the money if we had been a little bit more attuned to following what we were testing in intensity to vote, especially in the rural areas.
I want to get back to the stratification in a minute, but I have another question first.
Sure.
We should note that most polls correctly predicted the popular vote. The issue was the Electoral College. Is there a solid way for polls or a composite of polls can get a beat on the Electoral College, which ultimately, in some cases, decides the presidency?
Well, I think you should look at composites of polls within each state, and obviously there are several states that were off. And I think that probably most pollsters are probably going to use the 2016 turnout as a template for stratification for looking at 2020. It would be my guess. I don't know, Tom, maybe you have a thought on that as well. But I think we would use that and then maybe modify it or alter it based on the intensity to vote of Republicans and Democrats and independents in terms of the geography from where they're coming from.
Well, and Tom, I just want to break in here, and we should explain what stratification is for the layperson, what you mean when you say that.
Well, stratification is basically that you take a look at previous voting results geographically, demographically, and things like that, and you try to match up your sample size in your survey to that stratification, so that X percentage of your voters are Republican, Democrat, Independent. Then you also check on age, party identification, and some other factors depending on what the election is. One of the things that we've never really had to weigh in on was education. In the past, I don't remember ever really making any difference because the education level seemed to break traditionally with the vote. But
Obviously that was huge in terms of polling in Michigan for the presidential race.
Yeah, because those people who have a lower education level tend not to participate in surveys as much as those who have a higher. And in this case, those voters were Trump voters, and so they weren't as represented in a lot of the sample.
Right. Just to continue with Bernie's thought there, Tom, are there things that you've changed in your polling since 2016?
Well, we change all the time. I really think that in the past, we tried to figure out, how the undecided was going to break. It was very unusual to have such a high undecided going into the last week before the election. We were like, just like Bernie, we were at 4%, in favor of Clinton, but we had 13% undecided.
Mm-hmm.
And of those people who were undecided, 90% of them didn't like either candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you had to sort of figure out where were they going to break. And so we just figured they were going to they were probably going to split. But in this case, they decided, obviously, either they didn't vote, which was also a factor in this election that we've never seen really before, that people not voting at the top of the ticket. And they broke for Trump, which was considered to be probably the anti-status quo vote, where Clinton was looked at as being more status quo. That's all I can explain it. But what we have done is we're going to take the exact same thing as Bernie did. We're going to take a look at the 2016 turnout, and we're probably going to stratify initially our surveys based on that, and then we'll adjust as we go through the process to try to match up with the things that we are seeing within the electorate, the intensity levels. We'll probably do some weighting in this case based on education levels because we think they're underrepresented. One of the things that we did in 2016 turned out to be a mistake was that we were not getting as high of a participation from African-American voters as is traditional in the state. We were only getting 8%. So we weighted an additional 3% towards African-American, which gave Clinton an extra point on the lead. And actually, it turned out that we were right on target, and we shouldn't have weighted the data this time. So we'll take a look at all of those things. But the intensity level will be really everybody's trying to judge that because you're not going to know about that until the Democrats pick their nominee. How that intensity level, does it stay at the level that it is today, which Democrats are pretty cohesive and united in their opposition to Trump, but does their intensity level diminish a little bit if their candidate doesn't become the nominee for the Democratic Party? It will be really, I think, important.
And as we saw in 2016, that was the case for a number of African-American voters and some progressives who just felt like they weren't ready to turn out for Hillary Clinton.
Well, the thing that I recall is that about the week before when we released our data, I said that it could be a very close election given the trend line in terms of how the race was tightening, and that it could well depend on Hillary's ability to turn out African-American voters. And after that, Trump came in another time, and Obama came in, and Bill Clinton came in, and Jesse Jackson, and a whole myriad of black leaders trying to gin up the African-American turnout, and they didn't do it enough.
And it mimicked that Blanchard Engler campaign you talked about in 1990, where the African-American vote was not turning out at all for Blanchard at that point. They weren't excited, and everything was being done in the last weekend by the Blanchard campaign to try to gin up that vote, and they were unsuccessful.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Tom Shields of Marketing Resource Group and Bernie Porn of the polling firm Epic MRA. Gentlemen, I want to ask you both what methods you can use to draw out voters who might be shy about saying publicly that they support Donald Trump.
Well, first of all, I think that you have to make sure that you're increasing your use of cell phones, because more and more the landlines are not as representative as they have been in the past, and fewer and fewer people have landlines. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Tom and I are both looking at maybe not in 2020, but not long thereafter, trying to do 50-50 in terms of cell phone versus landlines.
Bernie, I can imagine what a challenge that is, given how many people, when their phone rings, if they look at it and they don't recognize the number, they're just possibly likely to just let it go to voicemail and not even pick up.
Could well be. That's why you just have to have a planned out sample, and a lot of our success in terms of sampling is based on the guy that we have that pulls our sample, and he does a very good job in terms of stratification geographically, but also making sure that younger voters have a more than adequate opportunity to participate in the poll.
Bernie's absolutely right. You need to just engulf as many people as possible in the polls. Where in the past, we have tried to narrow the audience as much as we could so we're not talking to non-voters. I think we have to give everybody an opportunity to get involved in this, because the turnout could just be huge next time. I mean, right now, everybody's expecting it to beat the 2008 turnout when Obama won. So you have to increase the size of that instead of decreasing the size, and then within the poll itself, sort of try to figure out who's voting and who's not voting there by these various intensity levels. But Bernie's right. I mean, we moved to 40% cell phones this year in our surveys, and we're probably going to move to 50% in 2020, because I think there will be a participation by young voters here, which we haven't seen. I mean, they voted, 30-35% at the most in these elections, but you may see that in this election, and the only way you're going to capture them is to contact them on their cell phones, or go to something, some type of hybrid of a survey, which includes, online, but that creates all kinds of other problems.
Does
Tom?
I agree.
Tom, does the turnout favor one candidate or party or another at this point?
Well, Michigan is a Democrat state, so if the turnout is huge and it's across the board, I mean, it's not higher in any one demographic or geographic or political group, it should benefit the Democrats. I think we've always said that if everybody turns out equally, the Democrats are going to win in the state. But that hasn't happened in the past. It's been more likely to happen in the presidential campaign. But again, we saw in 2016 sort of broke the mold in that you had voters who just don't traditionally participate in the process coming out. And anecdotally, I mean, you polled a pollster, you hate to do this. It's like talking to your next door neighbor and judging how things are. But, but I have a place up in northern Michigan, and I would travel up there, during the summer. And those 5-acre lots and 10-acre lots and 3-acre lots, off on the rural roads that had a trailer on them. I go, huge 4x8-foot signs for Trump. You never saw anybody. You didn't know anybody lived back there, much less. But, small businesses that had covered up their business sign with a Trump sign. I mean, you saw that kind of activity that you never seen before in those areas. And I remember taking pictures of it and sending it to friends and saying, this is incredible what's going on out here. I don't know if this is going to mean turnout, but anecdotally, there are people who are coming out of the woodwork showing their support who don't, who normally are not politically active.
Gentlemen, in addition to the head-to-head matchups, are there issues that you're polling on for 2020 that you think might be of interest?
I think that there's going to be several issues that could have an impact. There's a big debate in the Democratic Party, obviously, about issues like Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. some of the data that I've seen from Stan Greenberg would suggest, who has done a lot of polling in Michigan for Democrats, his data would suggest that the impeachment issue is not going to have as much of a driving effect on Trump voters as will the Green New Deal and the Medicare for All if Democrats end up nominating someone, either Bernie or Elizabeth Warren, who is in favor of the Medicare for All. That is an issue that could be a game changer in terms of how voters are motivated to participate in the election, and that could change the dynamics significantly. I think that that could be a mistake for Democrats to nominate someone who is talking about Medicare for All. And I think most Democrats support the Biden, Buttigieg, and Amy Klobuchar approach in terms of modifying the Obamacare proposal and improving upon that. And if they follow that and a nominee is not from the Medicare for All, I think that would benefit Democrats.
Yeah, and you know, and there may be some ballot proposals too. Who knows at this point in time what may make that to help drive turnout a little bit and get people interested. They don't usually do that, but people are looking for a reason to vote here. You know, they're pretty much already have one. But I think Bernie's right. Divisions within the Democratic Party. I mean, just watching the debates, I never thought I would see that. You know, Democrats criticizing Obamacare for being too conservative, and the, you know, the progressives in the party, are they going to, you know, where are they going to be if Joe Biden, you know, is the nominee? Do they back off? Does a Jill Stein or whoever in the Green Party all of a sudden, you know, get more votes? Or it'd be interesting. And I think it's more of a problem, Journey's right, for the Democrat Party than it is for Republican Party. If you have somebody extreme on either ends, what happens to the other folks in the middle? Republicans have frankly become a Trump party at this
yes.
point in time, and they some of them may be holding their nose. A lot of them were doing that in the last election. I mean, one of the things we didn't talk about here was third party candidates. I know Bernie and I both had Johnson, up at 6-8% early in the polling, and I think because it was just a place for the conservatives to go and where they could feel comfortable, who didn't feel comfortable with Trump's personality, who eventually came back and voted for Trump and didn't want to throw their vote away for a third party candidate. Stein didn't quite have as much, but she was getting 3-4% in most of our polls. She ended up with 1%, but those kind of things. I mean, one of the things that the media was trying to do was trying to basically get into a two-person race on the polling, and I think it's very important that you include at least the top 3 or 4 minor candidates in your polling this time.
Absolutely.
Because if you look at the two-party polling that was reported in 2016, a lot of those had Clinton at 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And that just wasn't accurate. Neither candidate hit 50% in the end, and she was never there. And you don't know. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with those third-party candidates this time? And do they... Did they find somebody attractive that can get more than 3-5%, and where will that vote come from? That will be really interesting. It's got to be included in the polling.
Tom Shields is senior advisor for Marketing Resource Group, a political strategy firm in Lansing, and Bernie Porn is with the research and survey firm Epic MRA. Thank you both for being here. I'm sure we'll be checking in again this year.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you much.